The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 25th, 2022.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
I am excited about today's show. Joining me in the studio, I have two young people looking at me, are two youth activists from Sunrise, Sonoma County, Rachel Cohen and Amy Cohen, both juniors at West County High and co-hub coordinators of this group. These young women are twins, and a little trivia, my father and Uncle Jack Holtz were identical twins. Excited about hearing from these young women and what they are doing and hope to accomplish. Our youth are on the move and speak out loudly about climate change and the needed action. We all need to be listening. Well, April 22nd was Earth Day. Earth Day honors Rachel Carson today, a woman who changed America and influenced the environmental movement with her evolutionary book, Silent Spring. Oh, I remember when I read that. Silent Spring is an environmental science book by Rachel Carson. The book was published on September 27, 1962, documenting the adverse environmental effects caused by the indiscriminate use of pesticides. The theme, and just to let you know, the theme for Earth Day 2022 is Invest in Our Planet. You know, it's really interesting when you start thinking about Rachel Carson, and 52 years ago she wrote that book. I mean, it was such an eye-opener for me. I was a new mother, and all of a sudden I'm reading about all these pesticides and all these spraying. And guess what? We're still fighting it. We're still fighting it. Roundup is still being poured all over everybody's lawns, even though we know it's a cancer-causing horror. Well, in honor of Earth Day, we have a very special treat. You know, Ken Norton, my co-producer here, is actually a climate pioneer. While attending San Jose State University in 1970, they buried a new 1970 Ford Maverick on the campus cafeteria building front lawn, and that was February 20th, 1970. My goodness, the event was part of a week-long, what they called, survival fair at the school, focusing attention on environmental problems. He will be telling us about the event that happened that day. Just think, that was 52 years ago, over a half a century. Well, Ken's going to tell us all about the contribution that he made. And it's really, it's so interesting when you think about how long it's been since we have known about some of the issues around the environment. And we're still having to protest. We're still having to say, come on. I mean, I don't understand it. Sometimes I want to walk up to these politicians and say, look, don't you have any children? Don't you care about the future? Aren't you aware that half the world is burning? I mean, right now, I believe it's in, where was that, Ken? Was that in Arizona?
New Mexico.
Oh, New Mexico. New Mexico is on fire right now. I mean, if that isn't enough proof for people, I don't know. What more does it take? Floods, hurricanes, you know, all these different, volcanoes, floods. You know, if there is a higher power, you know, that higher power is trying to say, hey, Mother Earth does not like what you're doing to her, so you better start cleaning up and start thinking a little bit more environmentally. Well, this is the last Monday of the month. I can't believe it. Where the heck did April go? I mean, my goodness. It's going to be May, Mother's Day. We have a wonderful show for Mother's Day. And I want to make a special announcement. Next week is going to be May 2nd, the day after May 1st. And I'm going to have a very, very special guest on. Harriet Fraud is going to be on. And she's going to be talking about women in the labor movement and talking about some of the stuff that happened during the Great Depression, why it happened. So I really encourage you to listen to that show. This is the last Monday of the month, and we're going to be doing the Women Spaces Pledge. Well, I'll tell you something. I love that pledge. And I have four people in the studio with me today, so that's going to be fun. I'm counting myself. Well, we had a real fun time last night, Ken and I, on Sunday. We went and saw the Hank Williams Lost Highway show. It was just amazing at the 6th Street Playhouse in Railroad Square in Santa Rosa. It was a real treat. And at the end, there was something really special that happened, which kind of blew my mind. After the cast made their bows, Steve Laster, who plays Hank Williams, got on his knees and gave Jennifer Baumana, who played Audrey Williams, Hank Williams' wife, an engagement ring and proposed to her. It was a beautiful moment and a fantastic performance by both of them. Of course, we checked it out and it was a real proposal and she said yes. Well, congratulations to both of them and I wish them a long and joyous life together. And just to let you know, the Hank Williams Lost Highway event was absolutely fabulous, and they're going to be playing. I think they extended it one weekend, so I would encourage you to go ahead and check with the 6th Street Playhouse in Santa Rosa to see if it's actually going to be happening. Well, another thing that happened that was really interesting, that was last Wednesday, April 20th. I don't know. I hope folks remember. I had a woman who is organizing the Women in Conversations event, and they had one called Call for Climate Action. Packed room. Amazing. We were all sitting around round tables so we can all, you know, meet and greet and talk to each other. And it was amazing being in a room with all these people who were so concerned about the future and climate change. And they had two special guests. And I'll tell you something. I'm madly in love with Wynonna LaDuke. She's an internationally renowned Native American activist and author of To Be a Water Protector, The Rise of the Willigoo Slayers. Wonderful, wonderful presentation by her. Just absolutely wonderful. I could have listened to her for 3 hours. She was only on for about a half hour. She was just absolutely fabulous. And then also on the bill was Jamie Margolian, who's the co-founder of the International Youth Climate Justice Movement, Zero Hour, and author of Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. Amazing, amazing young woman. She's only 20 years old, you know, and both, you know, it was interesting because Wynonna LaDuke started being a water activist when she was 16 years old. She's 62 years old now. And Jamie started about the same age, and I have the two young people in here, Amy and Rachel Cohen, and they just turned 17. So these are really, really young, young activists. And, you know, what I walked away with was two things. The first thing from Wynonna LaDuke, which really hit home to me, and that was when she said, we have to be patient. We have to put one foot in front of the other. That's all we can do is one foot in front of the other. And when asked, how do you recover? There's so many disappointments. There's so many things that you want to do that are not getting done. And she said how it helps her is that she recognizes that life is like a circle. Things go around. They keep coming around. She says, like, for example, their rice was not growing. And suddenly, years go on by, and they worked with the land, and all of a sudden, the rice comes back. She says, that gives you hope, because you know, as long as you keep working, as long as you keep speaking out, as long as you keep saying what it is, eventually, things will change. Eventually, things will circle around. She says that the most important thing is to not get discouraged, because there's disappointments along the line. You wonder, why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they moving fast enough? Why don't they understand? Well, you have to be patient. And you have to recognize that it's a long journey. Change is not instant. It takes a long time. Unfortunately, the human animal just takes a long time before they move. And then the thing that Jamie really impressed to me was that she was calling out to the youth to be really aware of burnout. You know, because of the disappointment, she says she notices that you have these youth that are in high school, that they're really moving forward. And all of a sudden, they get to college, and they're burned out. They're disappointed. They don't want to go on. It's useless. She says, no, you cannot think that way. But the first thing, the first rule of activism that she learned, and she said, I learned the hard way, is take care of yourself and make sure you drink lots of water. So I really thought, I mean, she was so honest and so sincere in her presentation. And then she wrote this wonderful book called Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. And it's like a guide for young people. It's a guide for young people to move forward, to help them with their emotions, to help them with their ideas, to help them with PR. I mean, it starts from the very basic thing of starting to be an activist and moving up. So it was just absolutely amazing seeing these two women. So a shout out for Women in Conversation, for Carlene Pate for organizing all this, and she was just wonderful. And everybody at the Luther Burbank Center, all the volunteers that were there helping us, a big, big shout out and a big thank you. It was well worth seeing her. And I would really encourage you to look up Wynonna LaDuke's, What Some of the Rhymes. I believe she's written 7 books. And also for you young people out there, I really encourage you to check out Jamie Margolian's Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. A very, very important piece of book that she wrote. I mean, I'm really proud of her. And it's also a guide for young people. And, you know, we all need a little guidance here and there. I know myself, I'm constantly researching and reading and all that other good stuff. Well, that's a lot to think about. And, you know, like we do every last Monday of the month, we do the Women's Spaces Pledge. So we're going to do that pledge right now. And I'm going to ask Amy and Rachel, let's identify yourself. Let me hear your voice, Amy.
Hello.
Hello. And let me hear you, Rachel.
Hi.
Okay, so it gives you a little identification of Rachel Cohen and Amy Cohen, who we're going to be interviewing on the second leg of the show. But we're all going to do the Women's Spaces Pledge together. Then I'm going to do Our History is Our Strength, and then we'll take a little bit of a break. And stay tuned, because you want to listen to Ken's story. So let's start. We're going to do the Women's Spaces Pledge, which, as I tell my listeners every last Monday of the month, I developed this for my grandson, because when he came out of his babysitting, he says, Grandma, my teacher told me I was a bad boy. And I thought, oh my God, come on, let's not start. Already he's a bad boy. Already he's crying about it. I mean, all the years that I thought I was a bad girl, and I wrote this pledge for him. And I thought, you know, here on Women's Spaces, what's a signature? What's something that I could offer people that they remember the show, but also have something of value in their hand? And that's what I think about this pledge. And just a little trivia, I talked to Staples, and I said to Staples, that's where I make the cards, and I says, how many cards did I make? I have to order some new ones. She says, you've ordered 7,000. I thought, 7,000 people have that card in their hand. You know, there's an old Yiddish word called yenta, and that's what a yenta does. She goes around, she passes out her card, you know, and that's it. Well, that's what I did, 7,000 of them, and that's what we're going to be doing, the pledge. So first I will say the first line, and I hope, Ken, you'll join me also. Okay, we'll have Ken, and we'll have Amy and Rachel here join me, and I'm going to say the first line. They're going to repeat after me, then I'll say a few words, and then we're going to all do it together. Okay, so let's go. My self-esteem does not depend
on anything
outside of me.
My self-esteem depends
on my relationship
with myself
and my higher power. Oh, my God, I just love listening to these two young women say that. It just gives me chills. It really does. Boy, I wish someone would have handed me that card at 17 years old. I was so worried. I mean, when I was 17, I was so worried about my hairdo and my lipstick and makeup and all that other stuff. The young people today, they have a whole different mindset, let me tell you. Okay, so I'm going to say it one more time and talk a little bit about it. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. That means people don't let people judge you. You know, one of the things about being 82, I was thinking to myself, in fact, I wrote something on Facebook. I says, the biggest mistake I made in my life was allowing other people to define me. You must define yourself. You must define yourself. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Wow. Well, I'm going to change. I'm on the next round of cards, I'm changing that on my relationship with the great spirit, the great mystery, the great power of the universe. I mean, you know, the parking lot fairy, all those things, you know, there's something outside of you, something that you that gives you that spiritual energy, so to speak. I know for me, I read something every morning. I get up and I read something positive. I know Ken reads the 10 words every day by Dr. Hermans, and this is how we start our day. And we always start our day by saying, good morning, did you sleep well? Give each other a hug, you know, because that's how you stay fresh. And to recognize that your self-esteem does not depend on what anybody's thinking of you, but what you're thinking of yourself. And why that's so important is because what you think of yourself, you project out to the world. And you would be surprised how people get to know you by how you present yourself. And there's nothing to be afraid of. I love what Frank, I'm watching the series, The First Ladies, and I love the idea of what Eleanor Roosevelt found in a book, the only thing to fear, only thing about fear is to fear itself. It's our fear that really devastates us. So if you will join me, we're going to go say it together, and we'll go 1, 2, 3. I like that. It's my little granddaughter, great-granddaughter's story. She loves when I go 1, 2, 3.
My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power.
Wow. How's that feel, ladies?
Really awesome.
Yes, here we are. We have two young people. They are validating this little saying, my self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. What a powerful statement. Well, one little thing. We got this little thing, of course, we do every Monday, and that's our History is Our Strength segment. And I found something very, very, very special that happened in April 26, 1777. April 26, 1777. I think you ladies are going to love this one. American Revolutionary heroine Sybil Ludington, 16 years old, rides 40 miles on horseback in the middle of the night to warn the American militia that the British are invading. 16 years old. Can you imagine her in 1777, when women had no voice at all, riding in this horse, telling everybody, the British are coming, the British are coming. And then a special, special, special happy birthday on April 27th, 1927, and she made her transition in 2006. One of my favorite women, Coretta Scott King, civil rights, human rights, and peace activist. She was also the wife of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and quite an activist in her own right. And I said, like I said, one of my heroes. Just amazing. Coretta Scott King. You know, I'm watching The First Ladies, and it's really an amazing show. I mean, it really is. It's giving you insight in what it was like to be a woman, to be, you know, the president's wife of this great country. I mean, it was just an amazing show. And when I think about Coretta Scott King, she was definitely one of those women. One of those women who brought forward so much and stood beside her husband and marched. I mean, I can't, you know, their house was bombed. I mean, I cannot believe what she went through. And then to lose him, I mean, my heart goes out to her. So happy birthday, Coretta Scott King, wherever you are. We acknowledge you and we recognize you for all that you have done. Wow, when I think about her, it's just a very emotional thing. You know, we are standing on the shoulders of many, many great women. Many great women. That's why it always breaks my heart when I see some of these women that tend to not support environment, do not support women's right to choose. You know, how many times have I said this on this show? I'm not for abortion. I'm not against abortion. It's none of my business what a woman decides to do at that point. What I support 1,000,000% is the right that we have choice. That's C-H-O-I-C-E, choice, that we make the decision whether we want to have a child or bring somebody into this world. And many of us have made opposite decisions. I know I'm grateful. I mean, here I am, twice a great-grandmother. And you know what that does for me? It makes me even feel more responsible that my blood is running in through four generations. I feel it's very important that we stand up and we stand with our youth. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and oh, this is one of my favorite songs, the Galaxy Song, sung by Cliff Black. You know, if my friend Marie is out there listening, I'll never forget when she brought this song to me. And it's a reminder that we live in this magical mystery universe, our Mother Earth, which we are celebrating and reminding everyone, if we do not take care of her well, we're already seeing the results of that. Well, anyway, when we return, Ken will be telling us this pre-Earth Day at San Jose State where they buried a car in 1970. So let's go ahead and let's play the song, The Galaxy, Ken.
Mother Earth says now. Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving, revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at 1,000,000 miles a day in an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go around every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Itself keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you feel very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause I'm afraid that we've been cheated here on Earth.
Oh my goodness, I love that song. Well, maybe what he says, we've been cheated on Earth, maybe because we're not taking care of the environment the way we should, we're actually cheating ourselves. Something to think about. Well, for you just joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, or its members and women's spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And to begin with, I'm going to have a conversation with Ken Norton, producer, co-producer of Women's Spaces, and he's going to tell us of his Earth Day story, that he was one of the students that buried a car in San Jose State University on February 20th, 1970. And I just love hearing his story. But before we start, Ken, I'm just going to give our listeners a little bit of history. Earth Day 2022, the theme this year is Invest in Our Planet. And it was celebrated last Friday, and it focused on accelerating solutions to combat our greatest threat, climate change, and to activate everyone, governments, citizens, and businesses to do their part. So that's just amazing. So I'm going to introduce now as my next guest our co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, I have a few things that I want to ask you. As the founder of Engineers for Awareness at San Jose State, talk about the event that happened on February 20th, 1970, when students buried the car. There is an article written about this day in the New York Times and the picture, and we actually believe that you're standing on the mountain looking over, so that's really, really exciting. So give us a little background. What was your motivation at that time, the type of car, how were the monies raised, and a little bit about the event?
At the time, this was in February 1970, it was a couple months before the official Earth Day that Senator Gaylord Nelson pretty much instituted on his efforts, and which we've been celebrating now every year since 1970. But in February of that year, there was a humanities class that was run by Professor John Sperling, whose fame is really founding the Phoenix University later. But at the time, he was a San Jose State professor and teaching that class in humanities, and they decided after studying the Population Bomb book by Paul Ehrlich, which dealt with the population, we have to handle our human population because it's causing too much of a load on the planet's atmosphere and environment. And besides that influencing me, I was not in his humanities class, but I was very much for that Survival Fair project, which they started there in that class. And through that class, they sold shares for a car that we were going to buy. It was $1 a share, and the students all contributed. And we had originally thought to buy a Dodge Charger, which was a muscle car using lots of gasoline. And we thought, no, this is, we couldn't afford it. We only raised $2,500. So we bought a Ford Maverick. And we bought a brand new Ford Maverick. And there was a big ceremonious march with it and parade from its dealership. I think it was in Los Gatos, which was close to San Jose. And they had this big parade going all the way to San Jose State. And when they reached San Jose State, just before the student union and the engineering building, right in that central part of campus, they dug a big hole.
Oh, wow.
And they dropped that car into that hole. And that photo that Elaine was talking about that was in the New York Times, that was where she saw, I noticed my picture there. I was standing over the rim of that hole looking down, and we were throwing dirt into the, ceremoniously throwing dirt into it. It was pretty much street theater. That was what it was designed to be, to make a big impression. Well, it was a big enough impression to have the New York Times write about it. So it worked. And we brought attention to not only that dealing with the car and the environment, but also everything else. I mean, we were influenced by Rachel Carlson's Silent Spring as well. So we had a couple things, and I just come up from Los Angeles to study at San Jose State, and I remember being in San Jose with a smog that was there that you just couldn't see. It was cloudy, and also my eyes were burning. So there's a lot of students were disappointed with the dream world that we received in the 50s, and this is how we were starting to react to it.
Wow, Ken, what a story. That is just amazing. I mean, to think that that's what kicked off Earth Day. Well, you know, here we are. You know, we're in the studio with two young activists, and I know there's many, many young people out there listening. As a student, what kind of advice would you give them today? And also just give us a little background, just real quickly, you know, segments running by very quickly about your website, The Scent of Light. But what advice, what kernel, one or two words you would give the students of today?
Well, I would say, act on your conscience. I mean, there was something we realized that was wrong. We were able to go against the grain of the popular media in our own families, just to say, to draw attention to the environment and to population. And that was, well, that's over 50 years ago. And I was only 22 at the time, and I have two 17-year-olds here in the studio. Amy and Rachel, and I'm so happy that they're here, because it's maybe a passing of the baton that we could say, just hang in there. It's not going to happen instantly, but hang in there, little steps, one step at a time. You're talking to friends, you're talking to others, you're joining groups. This is how you do it, and it's a long haul.
Yeah, it is. It's a long haul. But, you know, it gives you a purpose in life, you know, moving forward. Well, really quickly before we end the segment, could you tell folks just your website, Scent of Light? Ken does a little presentations. They're 5 minutes long, and they're just really wonderful. Give us your website and how they can get in contact with you, Ken.
Sure. I have some five-minute vignettes that I've created when I was on a radio show on another radio station. And I called it The Scent of Light. And you can tune into it on the web at my website, KennethENorton.com, and you will see the Scent of Light page. It's KennethENorton.com.
Well, Ken, thank you so much. And
thank you, Elaine.
I never forgot when I first laid eyes on Ken, I fell in love immediately, and now I know why. Because I could have him on the radio to tell this great story. Anyway, we are going to take a musical break now, and the song I'm going to be playing is We Are Here, sung by Shannon Birch. What a great message we need to listen to. We are the children of the earth, and what we give our Mother Earth, she gives back to us. As we are seeing through our house and all the other, through the abuse and not understanding who we truly are, we're seeing the result of all these climate changes. Amazing. When I return, joining me in the studio, I'm looking right at them, Rachel Cohen and Amy Cohen, both juniors at West County High and Co-Hub coordinator of Sunrise Sonoma County. And we're going to be talking about climate change, Earth Day, and Sonoma County Sunrise Group. And they will have, hopefully, maybe a little one question for Ken, but we're going to move on really quickly. And let's go ahead and listen to We Are Here, sung by Shannon Birch.
Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o, 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 hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with
reminder, we are here to take care of ourselves. We are here to take care of others. We are here to take care of our Mother Earth. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guests that are here with me in the studio, Rachel Cohen and her twin sister, Amy Cohen. Welcome, ladies. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's hear your voice.
All right. Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
No, it's really wonderful. I'm really, really grateful to have you here. Is it okay? I want to tell our listeners just a little bit about you before we begin. Well, Rachel Cohen, she was the one who contacted me, and it was just been a pleasure working with you, Rachel, is a junior at West County High School in Sebastopol and runs a local activist group, Sunrise Sonoma County, with her twin, Amy. Having been in Sunrise since the start of COVID and when combination of spare time, fear around fires, and a persistent sister pushed her to pursue activism, she has gained skills by filling a variety of needed positions in the hub, her favorite being a trainer. Rachel has organized several actions in the Bay Area to pressure elected officials to support bold and equitable climate action, including a 266-mile march, which we were very fortunate to be able to interview young women on the ground, a 266-mile march from Paradise to San Francisco focused on winning a progressive civilian climate corps and multiple allies outside the office of elected officials. Anything else you'd like to add, Rachel?
Not really. I think that covers it.
Oh, great. And let's talk a little bit about Amy here. Amy identifies herself as they/she, is a junior at West County High School, and the other Cub co-hub coordinator, and it sounds like you were the one that pushed Rachel into this, as she's been involved with Sunrise Movement for approximately 2 years, and along with their twin sister, Rachel, have helped to plan several actions in the Bay Area calling for bold civilian climate corps. They also have been a junior commissioner on the Junior Commission on the Status of Women. How absolutely wonderful. Anything you'd like to add, Amy?
No, I think that's good for me too.
Well, let's start. We'll start with Rachel first. Let's start with you first, Amy, since you were the one who pushed. What drew you to the activism? What was that moment when you knew you just had to do something?
Yeah, I think for me growing up, our family, we are really close with our extended family as well, and it's very much like activism is something that we've grown up around. But I think the big thing, a few big moments for me, one when the fires hit, I think, as well as like very shared experience in Sonoma County, like we personally didn't lose our homes, but we know people who did, and having to evacuate year after year was really terrifying, and really like allowed me to really realize the urgency of the climate crisis in a way that I don't think I had fully processed before. And then I think a combination of that, when Trump got elected and kind of like seeing those like hostile politics, especially like for me as a queer person, as a trans identifying person, how hard that felt for me, and really feeling like drawing again the urgency of the current moment that we're in to increased clarity. And then all of a sudden, when the pandemic hit, we had all this time on our hands. And so we joined the Sunrise Movement, hopped on some calls. I didn't think we really knew what we were starting to get ourselves into, but, you know, like 2 years later, we're still here, still organizing.
So you were 15 at the time.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
So did anybody say, you know, what are you doing? I mean, you're too young, or any kind of challenges like that?
Everyone in our family was incredibly supportive. They were actually, one of my uncles was one of the people who suggested Sunrise Movement to us as a place to get involved when we were looking for some activism to get engaged with.
And how about you, Rachel? I know your sister gave you a little, and I know my father and uncle were twins, and I know how they worked together, you know, that they were, there's a very special relationship. So what was your first moment, and when did you agree with your sister?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty hard to say no to my sister. And I guess I feel similar, you know, this sense of, like, hopelessness, and, like, this, you know, facing this pretty incompetent administration, and then seeing the fires that are really like hitting really close to home, And I think all of that was just a very terrifying experience. And yeah, basically Amy was like, hey, here's this amazing organization led by a bunch of like youth just like us. And so Amy kind of dragged me onto a bunch of Zoom calls. And after seeing kind of, I don't know, it was this amazing like community online, especially at a time when, you know, we were self-isolating, and there wasn't a lot of social interaction, having these like Zoom spaces was really powerful, and getting to see all these other youth online, you know, not much older than us, some of them in high school as well, leading these calls of like hundreds of people, talking about like collective liberation and how to really combat the climate crisis in an equitable and all-encompassing way, was just really, really inspiring. So yeah, I think that's how I was brought into the movement.
So here you were, all of a sudden, you're part of a movement, you're watching these Zooms, you know. Rachel, when you first, after the Zoom was over, why did you feel it was important that youth were doing this? What was your take? And also, if you could chime in, Amy, is what was your take after you saw that first Zoom, that here with all these young people?
Yeah, well, I feel like, I don't know, politics is something that youth are kind of pushed away from. that includes me. For years, I was terrified of political discussions, and Amy and my dad would be talking about politics, and I would literally flee the room. Like, I was so scared to just be brought up in that controversy. And I definitely know that I'm not alone in that. And a lot of other youth share those feelings. So just kind of seeing that, like, flip on the Zoom meetings, and seeing youth really taking, like, action and seeing themselves as agents of change, I can't stress how important that is in this moment.
You said something very important. Seeing themselves and seeing yourself as possible agents for change. Because oftentimes when you're young, I mean, we've all been young. Oh, be quiet. You know, children should be seen and not heard. You know, what are you talking? We'll take care of it. You know, and it's obvious things have not been taken care of. So that's a great thought, you know, all of a sudden seeing that agents, that youth can actually be agents of change. What about you, Amy? What was that? How did you feel about youth? What was your takeaway?
Yeah, I would say for me it was pretty similar. Something that was really important to me, like being in a room full of youth, it was a different energy. I think youth, like, a lot of us, like, we're really a lot more, this is our future at stake, you know, we're really grounded in what's at stake for us. And I think part of what was so amazing to me was being in a space where we aren't talking about, okay, what's politically feasible in the moment? What can we realistically get done? It was, no, what do we need to get done? What needs to happen to make our world livable, to make our world equitable?
Kind of a feeling of empowerment.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
What it sounds like. Like you felt all of a sudden empowered. I have a voice. I can speak out. I can help. I can be a change maker, which is amazing. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was where I was going.
Well, now, so you've had the meetings and you've had your own awakening, and you, like you said, you had an uncle that helped you. Now what are you taking away? Why do you think climate justice? I mean, that's what people are really calling for, is climate justice. I mean, it's almost like when I remember when they first came around about taking care of the animals, and someone says, the dog doesn't have a voice. We have to protect them, you know. And I feel the same way about the earth. The earth doesn't have a voice, although she does have a voice when she has a fire and a hurricane and a flood. But I mean, generally speaking. So why do you feel climate is justice? Well, what is important about that? Why don't you start with that first, Amy?
Yeah. Well, when I think of the term climate justice, I don't just think climate action. I think something else that's really important to me is that idea of climate equity. And I think historically, like, the climate movement has been rather exclusive and has not really included the voices of youth, of people of color, of queer people, of disabled people. And I think we've really lost a lot from that. And also at the same time, like, historically, the brunt of the climate crisis and of other such inequities have been born by those very people who are all too often left out of these conversations. And then at the same time, the way that the climate crisis has been built off of these systems of oppression. And so I think to me, something that's really important is having these people having people like me in these spaces, having these conversations, and really like bringing new perspectives and new ideas to the table, so that like when we if we succeed in combating the climate crisis, we do so not only in a way that like helps the planet, but also so that we're able to remake our society in a more equitable way.
That's a very, very important thing that you just said, and it's also, again, the commitment has to be there. You know, to know that it takes time, one step at a time. You know, and I know, I myself, I'm impatient. You know, I just feel what takes you guys so darn long? And what about you, Rachel? What do you think? What's your importance about? Why do you think climate justice is so important?
Yeah, well, as always, my sister sums things up very well. But I guess I would add that there's just this little slogan, be realistic, demand the impossible, that I really love and I think really resonates with both of us. Because this is, you know, this is like a huge changing moment, right? And we have this opportunity to radically change our society in a way that benefits everyone, you know, because we're already talking about big changes to our infrastructure, and just the way society operates. I mean, moving to an 100% renewable energy economy is going to take some serious changes. So it's kind of this amazing opportunity to kind of take advantage of that and realize that there's a lot of ways we can change. You know, we can change our society for the better so that it benefits everyone. And I think, yeah, that's kind of what's so powerful about climate justice, realizing that this is a fight for everyone. This is a fight for the planet. This is a fight for the people and the animals and everything that lives on it. So just seeing that intersection.
I couldn't have said it any better than you guys. That is just absolutely beautiful. You are so inspiring to me personally. I mean, as being a great grandmother, you know, and I'm looking at these little kids and I'm thinking, what is their future? What can I do? And I look at you and I think, well, things are happening. So thank you so much. Okay, let's talk about Sunrise. You know, what's the mission of it? How many members do you have? And then also, Amy, if you could talk about why you're choosing to focus on this whole thing about public transit, which is very important to both of you. So go ahead. Why don't whoever wants, you know, talk a little bit about Sunrise. Do you know who would have to know the mission?
I mean, I think we both know it as co-hub coordinators. But yeah, kind of as a broad movement, we're a national youth-led climate movement working to combat the climate crisis, and create millions of good jobs in the process. And as I said, this is a national movement, and there's hundreds of locally based hubs across the country run by people just like us. And yeah, that's kind of how we operate. Amy, do you want to talk a little more specifically about our hub?
Yeah, so we joined a little later. I think our hub's been around since 2018, 2019. And our hub has taken, I think, kind of in the past, a balance of local and federal level work. Right now we're shifting more to like state and local work. And so as a hub right now, our kind of like North Star, our main goal is a California Green New Deal, so like a state version of what our organization is fighting for on the national level.
Yeah, and I think the big reasoning behind that is because California has often been a leader in a lot of climate policy, among other things. So we have a vision for this, and you know, it's likely that after we can pass like a California Green New Deal, it will be able to, you know, be echoed by other states. So we kind of see this as like a model for the country.
Amazing. And why are you focusing on transit? Why do you see that? I can, when I start looking at your question, I start recognizing how important that is. But explain it a little bit. What do you think that is important about looking at that aspect?
Yeah, so there are two main reasons. The first one being emissions and the second one being equity. So in our county, public transit is responsible for 60% of all activities-based emissions. So really getting a lot more people on public transit and using public transit, making public transit more accessible, more sustainable, could really be a major step in reducing our emissions as a county. But at the same time, it would also be a major step towards climate equity, because our current public transit system in the county, based on like conversations we've had with other people, it's incredibly unreliable. And because of that, it leaves a lot of people behind. People who are too young to drive, people who have a disability and can't drive, people who can't afford a car, or people who don't drive for other like cultural or economic reasons, they really struggle to get around in our county. And so having a system that would be more reliable, that would ideally even be fare free, at least for youth, not just students, would be really transformative and really transform mobility in our county and people's ability to get around.
You know, it's really interesting that you bring that up. I love the bus. In fact, my first husband threatened to divorce me if I didn't learn how to drive. I didn't learn how to drive till I was 25. And it's very interesting every time I have an excuse to use the bus, because it's fun. It's a social aspect to it too. You know, we are so divided as a society. We live in our own house. We drive our own car. It's a wonderful interaction. So that's really, those are some good points. And also the air, you know, to make sure that there's electric cars. Are you going to tell me something, Ken? Okay, the next thing that I'd like to know is, what would you add to the conversation? You know, we're having a lot of conversation about climate, but what do you really think is the core? What is the most important thing that needs to be added at this point?
Yeah, so I think, as Amy kind of said before, and kind of our whole message here, it's not just about climate action, but climate justice. And I think this is something that the climate movement has definitely failed to recognize in the past. But I think this kind of new generation of climate activists is kind of grabbing onto that and realizing the importance of, you know, intersectionality and understanding that all these different movements for change are, you know, related to each other and support each other and build each other up. And so actually in Sunrise, we do a lot of partnership work. We work with a lot of other local organizations, and we understand that brings us power. You know, we're all much stronger when we work together.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. And I would really put an emphasis on movement solidarity and recognizing that, like, as one organization, you can't solve all these problems. You're not going to be able to, and you don't have to try and reinvent the wheel for every single thing. That there are a lot of really incredible organizations already out there doing some of that work, and that it's incredibly powerful to be able to stand in solidarity with them and have them stand in solidarity with you. And that, like, together, you're able to accomplish a lot more.
Right, there's power in numbers. You know, it's really interesting. There's a song called Power of the People. Mm-hmm. That is just amazing, because the people, there are more of us than there are of leadership. And we have to come together, and especially speaking out for the future of our youth. I mean, it's really interesting. Like, I always call, all the mothers and fathers need to be paying attention to this. They need to support their young people, and they need to support any kind of climate change actions or legislation that comes up, and not poo-poo it. I mean, for heaven's sakes. I mean, we are in a lot of danger. Well, we're really coming very quickly to the end of the segment. I mean, in the radio time is very quickly. So I'd like you to tell our listeners is how they get a hold of you, why you think it's important that youth should join with you, and when are your meetings or websites or anything that you would like to share right now. Just whatever, the mics are yours.
Yes, for sure. So you can find us by looking up Sunrise Sonoma County, and you'll find our website, and we have an interest form there for anyone who wants to get involved. And we're also on social media, so on Instagram, look up at Sunrise SoCo to find us.
Yeah, as far as meeting times go, it's a bit, we don't have set meeting times right now. We have a pretty flexible schedule. Oh, you can also get in contact by emailing us, sunrisesoco@gmail.com. And I think, I guess, as to the importance of working with us, I would say that, like, really going back to what Rachel said about having young people see each other and see themselves as agents of change. And whether or not Sunrise is necessarily the movement you want to get out and get involved with, I would say that, like, at least for me personally, being an activist, being involved in movement building has been some of the most incredible, fulfilling, and transformative work that I've ever done. And so I would encourage people to find a space, to try a movement, and get involved.
Well, thank you both. You've just been absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, that's it, folks, for our show. A special thank you to Ken Norton for sharing his Earth Day story, and to our Sunrise Sonoma group, youth group, Sunrise coordinators, or I guess you call yourself hub. It's called a hub.
Hub coordinators.
Rachel Cohen and Amy Cohen. Really, what powerful young women you are, and I wish you really much success. And also, to let my folks know, if you want to wish anyone a happy anniversary, a happy birthday, etc., always write me at elaine@womenspaces.com, and I'm happy to announce it. A reminder, tell your friends Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. And also, if you go to www.womenspaces.com, you'll get all the different websites that we have mentioned today. This is Elaine Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 25th, 2022.